We wanted to make sure we understood that the North Koreans, Kim Jong-un, was prepared to talk about the things that matter most.
Many moving parts are in motion regarding North Korea. It's Tuesday, May 1st. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, public sentiment rises in South Korea. A UN team gains new access in Myanmar. Vietnam, vocal on China. Automating HIV drugs and your next cup of coffee. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China's top diplomat, Foreign Minister Wang Yi, will travel to North Korea this week, following last week's historic inter-Korean summit and ahead of a proposed meeting between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. Appearing on the ABC program this week, new U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who met with Mr. Kim 4 weeks ago, said the U.S. objective remains unchanged: complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization.
I had a mission to begin to lay the groundwork for President Trump's meeting with Kim Jong-un. We wanted to make sure we understood that the North Koreans, Kim Jong-un, was prepared to talk about the things that matter most, to give us a basis to have that meeting between the president and the chairman. It was a productive one. We had a good conversation. We talked about serious matters. We had an extensive conversation on the hardest issues that face our two countries. I had a clear mission statement from President Trump. When I left there, Kim Jong-un understood the mission exactly as I've described it today. And he agreed that he was prepared to talk about that and to lay out a map that would help us achieve that objective. Only time will tell if we can get that done.
Pompeo also revealed that the matter of three jailed Americans in North Korea was discussed, a matter White House National Security Advisor John Bolton said is at the top of the president's mind. On Sunday, South Korea said the North is preparing to invite American and South Korean experts and journalists to watch the country shut its nuclear test site in May. Pyongyang is also promising to set its clocks forward 30 minutes to the same time as South Korea. Despite all that has happened, Tufts University Assistant Professor Sung Yoon Lee tells VOA's Victor Beatty, so far, Kim Jong-un has only given away concessions he can afford to.
Releasing the U.S. detainees, changing so-called Pyongyang time to comport more with standard time in the region. North Korea has offered, Kim Jong-un has, to shut down its old nuclear testing site, probably because it doesn't need to conduct another underground test. They've shown the world that they can do a hydrogen bomb test last September.
What is the key to sincerity on the part of North Korea?
Kim Jong-un is stealing pages from his daddy's playbook. It's almost as if the Kim dictators have a split personality. They relentlessly go on a bluster barrage threatening war, and then all of a sudden, very dramatically, puts on an entirely different face, flashing smiles for the cameras. And that's what Kim Jong-il did when he hosted the South Korean president for the very first inter-Korean summit in 2000, when he sent a special envoy to the Clinton White House, when he visited Putin in 2001, received Japanese Prime Minister Koizumi in Pyongyang in 2002, and so on. And this is an elaborate process by which the funny-looking, cruel North Korean dictator effects a metamorphosis, morphs from being little rocket man, cruel dictator, to a global statesman.
Your assessment of that inter-Korean summit?
I think we're looking for indicators of change in all the wrong places. Kim Jong-un is very good at theatrics. North Korea is very good at choreography, putting on the world's biggest spectacle, the Mass Games, featuring 100,000 performers and so on. So this is not unexpected at all. It's entirely predictable. Everyone says North Korea is so unpredictable. Well, I would say North Korea is approximately predictable. So the real indicators of change would be, you know, downsize that hyper-expanded military of over 1.1 million men, remove those tens of thousands of cannons, artillery trained on South Korea, dismantle the gulags, release political prisoners, grant the people some basic freedoms, like freedom to receive and impart and access information and ideas and so on. But none of that is happening. All Kim Jong-un has provided so far is verbal palliative that he will change, that he will be amenable to nuclear negotiations, and he won't conduct any ballistic missile tests in the meantime. Whereas if a notorious international outlaw said, I won't commit any crimes in the meantime, and then is wined and dined by world leaders, I think we would find that strange.
South Korea's military says it will soon pull back all high-decibel loudspeakers installed along the border with North Korea following last week's inter-Korean summit. The South earlier halted propaganda broadcasts to the North. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. Donald Trump suggests DMZ as location for Kim meeting. What's behind Vietnam's more vocal stance against China? UN envoys in Myanmar for talks with Aung San Suu Kyi. European Union defends training of Myanmar police after alleged entrapment of journalists. Another U.S. diplomat hits motorcyclists in Pakistan. Expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Optimism abounds in Seoul following the historic summit between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. VOA's Brian Patton reports from the South Korean capital with local reaction to the summit and expectations for the future.
From that historic step across the border, marking the first time a North Korean leader had ever entered South Korean territory, to the jovial moment when Kim Jong-un invited South Korean President Moon Jae-in to step back over the border into the north, to the animated conversation the two leaders had as they sat alone for 30 minutes, to the joint declaration proclaiming that a new era of peace has begun, the inter-Korean summit has left many in Seoul feeling hopeful about the future.
I was very thrilled while watching it. It was a time that gave me hope that unification may come very soon.
To many viewing the summit, the young North Korean leader also came across as more reasonable and open to change than the authoritarian figure who in the past had repeatedly threatened to launch nuclear strikes against his enemies.
He seemed to be very authoritative as a dictator, but he gave a positive impression that he is daring, smart, and bold.
At the summit, Kim agreed to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. North Korea has unilaterally suspended nuclear and missile tests, and officials in Seoul said Pyongyang would invite international experts and journalists to witness the closing of the country's nuclear test site in May. Following the summit, President Moon's approval rating increased to over 70%. Many conservative voters who did not support the liberal president now give him credit for persistently pursuing diplomatic engagement.
Even after Moon Jae-in became president, as I was a conservative, I did not have favorable feeling of him. But he seems to be sincere and responsible with his words. That makes others trust him.
The joint denuclearization declaration, however, is just the beginning of the negotiation process. Next up, the meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Kim that is expected to take place before July. While the Trump administration has been supportive of the progress made so far, it wants to see irreversible reductions in the North's nuclear program before agreeing to reduce economic sanctions. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, Chinese scientists have developed a new chemical method for stem cell creation, the most powerful cells in the human body that help regrow and regenerate cells. The study was conducted by scientists from the Guangzhou Institutes of Biomedicine and Health of the Chinese Academy of Sciences. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us today on VOA Asia. A team of diplomats from the UN Security Council was to meet the de facto leader of Myanmar, also known as Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi, on Monday, after visiting Muslim Rohingya Muslim refugees Sunday. They said they fled a crackdown by the Myanmar military they said included rape, murder, and arson. Among the delegation members was British diplomat Karen Pierce, who encountered the women and girls subjected to the alleged atrocities.
Enormous distress and sympathy for what those poor women and those poor children have been through and are still going through. And it's enormous horror that other human beings could put them through that. And I think it shows us the scale of the challenge as we try, as the Security Council, to find some way through that enables these poor people to go home. The sad thing is there's nothing we can do right today that will make their distress any less. But I think it gives everyone another reason to redouble their efforts in the Security Council.
Pierce said the Rohingya came from Myanmar and the solution, she added, must lie in Myanmar. U.S. Deputy U.N. Ambassador Kelly Curry warned the suffering of nearly 700,000 refugees will worsen soon with the onset of monsoon rains. Monique Skidmore is a professor and deputy vice chancellor of the University of Tasmania in Australia. She tells VOA the U.N. diplomats wanted to see for themselves if the allegations against the Myanmar security forces were overblown given the strident rejection by the army of the refugees' claims.
And it's very clear that they have been, in their own words, overwhelmed by the trauma of what they've witnessed, by the graphic photographs they've been shown. And I think they've been very much energized to try and sort the situation if it's at all possible.
Skidmore says the refugees themselves know what the UN is able to do and have asked for specific actions.
Residents of the refugee camps are well aware. The UN Security Council does have the ability to refer the Myanmar government to the International Criminal Court, and that was one of the demands that they presented to the delegation. The other interesting demand was that they wanted the UN to supervise their repatriation. And this, I think, strengthens Aung San Suu Kyi's arm greatly, because here she has an opportunity to suggest to the military that if she can do something to make sure that they are not referred to the International Criminal Court, perhaps the best way forward is to allow the UN to re-enter Rakhine State. And in this way, she would have independent eyes over the ongoing situation there.
As the UN team meets with Aung San Suu Kyi, Skidmore says she's looking for a reset in relations with the world body.
In the last week, she has hinted that she wants a new relationship with the UN. And on Tuesday, after meeting Suu Kyi, they will go to Rakhine State. And that'll be the first time the UN has been allowed into Rakhine State since this occurred last August. So she is hoping that she will be able to have supervised faster process of repatriation, and that it will stop this incipient warfare that's been going on, a war of words between the UN and Aung San Suu Kyi and her party and her government. And this would allow a much better security for the Rohingya when they repatriate to Rakhine State.
2 weeks ago, Myanmar said it conducted its first repatriation, but Monique Skidmore said that process hasn't really begun, in part because of the demands of the refugees, including citizenship, a halt to the construction of refugee camps for those returning to Myanmar, and UN supervision of their return to their restored homes. Coming up, a familiar South China Sea spat. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Thank you. This news from VOA Asia: South Korea's military will take down propaganda loudspeakers from the military demarcation line today. The loudspeakers, which until last week had routinely played high-decibel broadcasts across the heavily fortified demilitarized zone, were turned off as a gesture of peace ahead of Friday's leaders' summit. Keep your speakers on for the full experience when you visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Vietnam sounded off twice last week against China over a long-festering maritime sovereignty dispute after months of silence. But analysts expect to see angry phases like this, one alternating with silent ones. The Foreign Ministry of Vietnam said on April 24th, China violated Vietnamese sovereignty by installing military jamming equipment in the disputed seas Paracel Islands. Carl Thayer, Southeast Asia Specialized Emeritus Professor at the University of New South Wales in Australia, says the equipment could disrupt Vietnamese flights and its own military activity. Thayer says Vietnam increasingly values economic ties with China and looks to political channels for solving disputes.
Internally, the leaders have to constantly weigh what's China's reaction going to be in particular circumstances. And if they're looking for something, they may not want to rock the boat and move more cautiously. So it's tactical, but it's that constant weighing up of, we go too far, or haven't we done enough, and looking at internal pressure.
Vietnam and China contest parts of the South China Sea. Brunei, Malaysia, Taiwan, and the Philippines also claim all or parts of the sea, which includes prime fisheries and fossil fuel reserves. While China claims about 90% of the sea, other countries rarely speak out. Analysts often look to Vietnam first for any outcry against Chinese military expansion in the seas Paracel and Spratly Island chains. But until last week, Vietnam had withheld virulent criticism of China since condemning military exercises in August 2017. Some scholars, like Eduardo Ararol, say it wants a stronger economic and political relationship.
There's some balancing mechanism, so it's a hot and cold relationship. But I do not expect the Vietnamese government to go out of its way to criticize China, because it's a very delicate situation.
Vietnam counts China as a source of tourism and raw materials for manufacturing. We thank Ralph Jennings in Taipei for sending us this story. This news from VOA Asia: Thailand has freed a former magazine editor jailed for royal insult in 2013. The high-profile Thai activist vowed to keep pressing his call for democracy after he was released from prison and greeted by about 100 supporters. Greet your day with the top stories online at VOA 60 and VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, what if refilling a prescription was as easy as withdrawing money from an ATM? A South African tech company wants to make that possible. Their innovation, the Pharmacy Dispensing Unit, is currently being tested in Johannesburg, and health experts say it could provide a strong boost for the fight against HIV/AIDS in South Africa and potentially the region. Zahir Kassam reports for VOA from Alexandra Township of Johannesburg.
Hilda Dlala is off to pick up her antiretroviral medication. She must do this every month. In the past, she could miss a whole day of work waiting at the clinic, but not today.
Before, when I was taking my medication to the clinic, I have to wake up 5 o'clock and come back again 5 o'clock. Now, I think now this new system is much more easier, because now I can take my children to school and go and collect my medication. It's much more easier now.
This is the Pharmacy Dispensing Unit, or PDU. The machine was developed here in South Africa and is being piloted in Johannesburg townships in partnership with the local government. The PDU scans a patient's identification. A pharmacist pops up on screen for a quick check-in. All that's left to do is pick up the medicine refill from the bin below. It takes about 3 minutes.
So here we provide chronic medication, and the majority of our chronic patients are HIV positive, so they take ARVs. That's close to 90% of the medication that we stock here.
Currently, 3,000 to 4,000 patients are seen a month in this facility, with this number expected to quadruple within the next couple of years. South Africa has the world's largest HIV epidemic, accounting for 1 in 5 people living with the virus globally. But only about half of HIV patients in South Africa access ARV therapy. Dr. Mabulawa Mugabe of UNAIDS is optimistic about the PDU.
So for me, it's a game changer because one of our biggest challenges today in most countries in Africa is the fact that our facilities are congested. We need to find ways in which we can release the congestion, both for in the interest of the patient themselves, but also in the interest of the health system themselves, so that we lessen the burden. In other words, patients who don't need to go in queue don't have to go in queue.
PDU centers are expected to open soon in 2 other townships. The company envisions one day installing PDUs in malls and other public spaces as well. Zahir Kassim for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Along with dispensing meds, there's been a long tradition of making and drinking coffee across cultures and continents. Now a tech company in Austin is adding to this tradition by creating robot baristas to make the coffee drinking experience more convenient. For a similar price of a cup of Starbucks designer coffee, a robot can now make it too. VOA's Elizabeth Lee finds out whether robots will replace traditional baristas.
This busy barista can brew a fresh cup of designer coffee at any time of day.
I think it's super cool. It's so innovative. I've never seen anything like this before. It's really fun to like watch your coffee getting made by a robot.
This robot barista also solves a problem that spans continents, says Charles Studer.
So it's coffee is a very, it's ubiquitous, right? And this problem that we're solving is common around the world. The problem is very high quality coffee that's convenient, that's consistent, done just the way you like, and that is very efficient in the use of the beans and the raw materials.
Studer started Brigo, a company that created this robot barista. Customers can download an app on their mobile phones and customize their order. When it's ready, customers can go to the robot barista and pick up their order.
It's perfect to just avoid lines, just getting there, picking your coffee, and you're good to go for the day.
I started the company really thinking about the way we consume quality products in the West. We're often very wasteful, and we don't really understand what it's taken to get those quality beans, in this case beans, to our mouth, essentially. And we want to be able to connect at the end of the day, not just solve the problem of quality coffee convenient, but also the connection back to origin.
Studer's long-term goal is to create impact by connecting the consumer with the coffee grower, such as this direct trade partner in Guatemala. It can be possible through the internet and social media.
Maybe the farmers have some issues, and maybe we can do programs where we connect you and say, help with a water project, or help with a motor blower that's gone down in the small cooperative. So how do we use the technology of this century to connect people in lots of different ways? And coffee is a common ground that everyone can relate to.
While big-name coffee brands such as Starbucks dedicate a portion of their business to bettering the farming communities that supply their product, will this robot barista with a social cause threaten or even replace more traditional cafes?
It's going to take a little bit of time, but I'm sure that we're going to be having this instead of having like Starbucks.
Studer says both robots and human baristas can serve different coffee needs.
It's a big market. And so there are specialty coffee shops where there are high-quality trained baristas that I don't think we'll ever replace. I mean, there is a place and time for those. But there's a lot of places around, think of a hospital in the middle of the night. Where is the quality coffee there? Where is it at 5:30 in the morning at the airport? And so we want to get that quality experience in all those places that are really underserved.
Brigo's robot baristas are currently in the Austin area, but there are plans to expand to other cities. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Austin.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Of course, we're streaming each and every day on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as VOA Burmese. We say hello to everyone in Myanmar who is listening to our program today on Facebook. You can also download our podcast, Take VOA Asia With You. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.